Welcome to Manager Tools. Our guidance on the foundations of presenting. Part one. Folks, this podcast answers the questions. What are the fundamentals to mastering presentations? What should I work on when I'm just starting to present? How can I become a truly outstanding presenter? If your knowledge of DISC, high D's, I's, S's, and C's, the perfectionists, the Attila the Huns, the marketers, the team players, if that has helped you become more effective at work, you'll want to seriously consider coming to our Effective Communications Conference. We set the basics of DISC in an hour or so, and then we spend the rest of the day teaching you how finally to communicate effectively, which is to pay attention to what your listener does and communicate in a way that makes sense to them. At the end of the day, you'll be able to read someone in a conversation, determine their major DISC tendency, and then based on that, make some changes in how you deliver to improve the chances that you get harmony and congruence and collaboration and not drama, conflict, and tension. Come see us.
We're going to talk today about the foundations of presentation mastery and how to be an expert. And I know the answer to this. It's all about the audience.
Yes, it is. Not that anybody else knows that.
I've just given it away, but it's more complicated than that, right?
It's way more complicated than that. Yeah, and the vast majority of people who are presenting today, which is far more people than used to present percentage-wise in organizations than was true 30 or 40 years ago, the vast majority of people think that mastery has to do with level one of a three-level mastery process. And there are three key foundational pieces to mastery when it comes to presenting. First of all, you have to master the content you're presenting. That's what most people think of it as mastery.
Don't I start with the ums and ahs?
Yeah, yeah. The second thing we have to do is master the behaviors, such as ums and ahs. And only when you've mastered the final step can you really think of yourself as having complete mastery as a presenter. You have to master your relationship with the audience.
So how do we master content?
Yeah, well, it's different for manager tools. Folks, full disclosure, this is a rare departure from the manager tools, career tools mantra of actionable behavior, what to do and how to do it and how to say it. As I have been trying to build the series of podcasts about becoming a master presenter, I realized that so much of being able to talk to people about what to do was a little hollow without the underlying principles. And so I decided that we would do some principle casts to help everybody understand the conceptual theories, the underpinnings of presenting. And that will allow you, in those situations where you may not know precisely what to do, it will allow you to make good choices in those gray areas. So we don't have a lot of actionable guidance here, maybe one or two small bits of actions to take, but there, you will probably hear or see yourself in some of our examples, and that should help you know whether you're doing it right or whether you need to change it. So yeah, you're right. The first step, if you want to be a great presenter, you have to totally master the content you're presenting. You have to know your material significantly better than virtually anyone in the audience. Not saying you have to know it better than everyone in the audience, because there could be one person who knows it 10 times better than you, but you have to know it significantly better than almost everyone. If you don't have content mastery, folks, you cannot become even a competent presenter, let alone become highly effective. The vast majority of people, I'm talking 98% of the people I see present, have not even mastered the content they're presenting. And if they get close, they assume that they have almost become an expert without realizing that they've only reached step one of a three-step process. And I should also say this, Wendy, I've talked to Mike about presenting over and over again. Mike is a black belt. I don't think he works at it as much anymore. But I've heard many times from people who have an affinity for the martial arts, who have studied martial arts, that most people who are white or green or red or yellow or purple belts or whatever, they think of black belt as the epitome, the top.
Mm-hmm. Once you've got the black belt, that you're at the top of Everest.
Yeah. And a way to say it is, okay, you've learned. And what black belts say is, no, a black belt is when you start learning. Same thing true here. People think that by mastering content, they will achieve the pinnacle. And in fact, they've only just started. When we coach executives on presenting skills and we share this principle about content being critical, people are just unimpressed. They act as if they already know it because that's been their goal. But really, they show by being unimpressed that they don't get it because they don't understand it's just the first step. And the mistake they make is the most common mistake that is made conceptually, if you will, in presenting, is believing that content is the only thing. That, you know, I feel good about myself. I know who the audience is. Those things are given. They're unchanged. I can't do anything about them. So therefore, it's content that matters. And I got to tell you, it reminds me of Mark Twain. It's not what you don't know that kills you. It's what you know for sure that isn't true. And people believe this, and it's just not true. If you believe that it's all about content, what happens behaviorally when people prepare for presentations is they focus on the content. But if you think about it for just a second, folks, you can come up with a thought experiment that essentially crushes that idea. The same content presented to two different audiences has to be presented differently to each one in order to achieve any reasonable goal that you would set of presenting that material. Because if you present it precisely the same way and you get two different results, the audience results certainly matter more than your behavior, right? And in theory, people, I hope people get that. So a lot of presenters who, quote, didn't make a mistake and, quote, answered every question, unquote, and thus, quote, unquote, mastered the content, believe wrongly that they were masterful. And I got to tell you see a presenter who walks off stage in bliss having, quote, nailed it, unquote, and the audience leaves in disgust. They didn't get what they wanted. And look, guys, if we have to find a villain that accelerated the downward slide of presentation effectiveness in the modern world, it would be slide presentations. And I have a great history I like to share with people about slide decks and so on. I'm not going to do that today because this is not about the underlying behaviors. I don't even think people understand why PowerPoint pages are often called foils by people, let alone slides.
And transparencies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And folks, if you think the world is messed up, I assure you the world didn't think it was getting messed up on the way to getting to where it is today. There were good reasons for everything that happened. And probably if you think the world's messed up, it's because you're measuring the gap between where we are versus where we could be. And the world is always in a state of future becoming. And if you'll read anything about the history of mankind, you'll discover that, in fact, mankind is so much better off now than it used to be that it's almost embarrassing to talk about how well we're not doing, because things are so good, it's almost blissful the extent to which things are good. So I don't want to go through the history of PowerPoint and so on, but once you know that great presentations start and end with the audience, you begin to see where PowerPoint will cause that to decay, because presenters don't start with the audience, but they actually start. I mean, they literally define the presentation as the deck, as the slides, as the PowerPoint.
People often say, they don't say, I'm working on my presentation. They say, I'm working on my slides.
Yeah, exactly.
But what they mean is, I'm working on my presentation.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Folks, seeing preparation for a presentation as the creation of a slide deck is the most common behavioral mistake that people make presenting today. And I'll give you an example, folks, that some of you it ought to resonate with. If you have to look at your slides to know what to say next, you have not mastered your content. And look, I say that because I know everybody who's listening has had to look at their slides. Mm-hmm. Okay. But the idea behind mastering your content is never having to look at your slides. In fact, slides, well, I've said this before, slides aren't the presentation. You are. So if you put this content-centric focus that most people have, that there's only one stage, and then you pair that with PowerPoint, people then dumb down the work they do to master their content. And I call it thin content mastery rather than deep, or I guess shallow content mastery might be a better word. And what you end up doing is focusing only on what you're going to say. And when you do that, when you think the presentation is what you say, which is not true, you leave out the two deeper levels of content mastery, which for simplification purposes today, I'm simply going to call them questions and principles. For most presenters, focusing on content means deciding what you're going to say. And that makes sense if you're not going to understand, if you're not going to try to consider the audience. And folks, I know that some of you are going, wait, I do consider the audience. Yes, but you've made the audience a single lump. And you, because you know all of them, therefore you draw a general conclusion about the audience. But even at that moment, you're wrong because the audience doesn't exist.
Hold on. You just said the audience doesn't exist. How's that?
Yeah, I mean, look, it doesn't, because everybody in the audience, I mean, the audience can't have an experience. Groups don't have experiences. Individuals have experiences.
I get it.
And so we call it the audience. Notice it. We call them the audience because it is easier to use a singular concept than mentioning everyone's name. It's a linguistic shortcut. But the audience doesn't experience anything. It doesn't. Every person experiences something. And we often measure the audience by doing averages and so on, and that's fine. But we've all given presentations where we describe the audience and then we say, but Bob is the guy that really matters. And so therefore, maybe your audience ought to be much more around Bob. But look, if you consider the audience and you begin to see them as individuals, you realize they're going to be people who disagree with you. There are going to be people who misunderstand you because you're using a language that makes sense to you, but the person in the audience may be different than you. They may ask questions. And the reason that you have to consider that is because the fundamental principle of communication that we talk about all the time around here is communication is what the listener does. The reason I say something is I have an idea in my head, and of course that idea is in a picture form. It's not in words. So my message gets attenuated when I say anything. Which, by the way, people mistakenly believe, therefore, that PowerPoint helps, but it doesn't, because those are words. But even worse, they're words that don't have any tone or tempo or context associated with them.
And they're usually abbreviated, right? Yeah. You only have like four words to mean.
Well, no, it depends. If you really want to screw this thing up, all you have to do is say, well, let's just make the font really small. I'll put all the words up there. And even better, then we'll put an Excel spreadsheet up there. Oh, no, wait, let's do it even better. Let's have a live link to an Excel spreadsheet somewhere else, because that will show that I'm really up to date and so on. All of which, folks, we're kidding. All of those are incredibly bad ideas. But if I'm trying to get a point across, the fundamental premise of conversation is I have an idea in my head that I want Wendy to share in her head. I then turn it into words, which of course requires attenuation. Then she actually hears something different than what I said because, well, for no other reason, she's British, for heaven's sakes.
And I'm not you. The only person who perfectly understands you is you.
Yes, if only that were true. And then lastly, she then translates that into her brain and then again into words that she uses and then again into pictures to store it in her brain, because that's how our brains work. The chance that I get my picture from my brain into hers perfectly is limited to one word answers to yes or no questions. And by the way, if the question she put to me is not clear, we may in fact still have problems. So the audience is really the determinant of success. And so therefore, when there are problems and so on, you're going to get questions. Actually, questions in general are a good sign. I'm assuming these are ethical questions that are not designed to destroy the presenter. Although if you get a question that's designed to destroy you and you are completely prepared content-wise, you are completely prepared behavioral-wise, and you are truly paying attention to the audience, you will not only not be destroyed by that question, you will win over more of the individuals in the audience while subsequently silencing the person who is attempting to destroy you. That's what content behavioral and audience mastery, relationship mastery do for the truly masterful presenter. But questions are the way audiences judge, evaluate the content mastery levels of a presenter.
So are they just asking me questions to see whether or not I know the answer?
No. They're asking you a question in order to supplement or rearrange or translate what you have said into a language that their brain can understand and store. Okay.
Right.
And sometimes they ask it just to be persnickety. And some people ask it a question that's rude, but it's not because they intend to be rude. They're not trying to be rude. They're just a rude person. They don't know it. And that's fine. That happens too. But the reason this is important when it comes to questions, for most presenters, they never consider that the audience's perception of their mastery is actually the standard. It's not how you feel about what you know about content. It's how the audience feels about the entirety of what you do that matters. And that's kind of funny in a sort of tragic way. And so for far too many presenters, the lack of preparation for a reasonable question, and preparation for questions would be part of content mastery, and it causes them to rush their answer. It causes them, not having content mastery, let alone behavioral mastery, to be perceived as insecure. And it only takes the slightest change in tone of your voice to cause that to happen. And an answer that is to a question that could be reasonably assumed to happen, an answer that isn't effortlessly confident and illustrative of your deep mastery of the content, damages the credibility, not just on that topic, but on the entire presentation. Audiences assume that you are not telling them everything you know. But because most people only focus on content and then determine that to be only the bullets on the slide, they therefore make the mistake of saying, I have mastered my bullets. But the audience sees the bullet as part of one dot, one pixel in the picture. If you can't describe the picture to them, your individual pixel is irrelevant.
Right.
And there's another level after that, beyond just what you're going to say and the questions you might get asked. Really what matters, the top level of the first level, are principles. If you really want to be perceived as having mastered the content, which is the only way the audience is going to have a great relationship with you, a presenter has to know the principles underlying the content they're responsible for. And the content they're responsible for, again, is not just what they say, but also the questions that could reasonably come of it. So you have to know everything around that as well. I think a lot of presenters would say, you know, I'm presenting mostly the core of a golf ball, and the core of a golf ball is 2/3 the ball, let's say. It's actually probably 9/10 the ball. And then there's a thin outer covering, which is what the audience thinks. It's much more like your content. The things you say are a BB, which is probably, how would we describe the size of a BB?
I don't know what one is.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking of it. Let me put it this way. A ball bearing,
A
fairly small ball bearing inside of a bowling ball. That's probably a better relationship between the weight of two things. What you say is as small as that relative to the principles that wrap around it that provide you complete mastery.
It's like they used to tell us in math class, no, you can't use a calculator because you need to know how the math works.
Exactly.
And you know, if you can add a bunch of things or make a square root on the calculator, but you don't know how a square root works, the fundamental of it, you cannot explain that to someone else. You can not do things that are slightly quirky, or, you know, there's an odd number that works out differently, which is, I guess, what the presenters need to be able to do. That's what the questions are.
Exactly. And the classic example of this is, in the modern world, it's 2016, somebody texting and having a Facebook relationship with a quote friend unquote, and then saying, Dad, I don't need to talk to them, we text. Oh, okay. Yeah. And yet, for somebody whom you care about deeply, you want to talk to them face to face, you want to see them. And then I interview people all the time for companies who are young and smart and could be destined for greatness and have no ability to communicate in a face-to-face way because the majority of their communication has been devoid of the kinds of feedback and emotional complexity of talking to someone face-to-face. So you really have to understand the underlying principles. You have to know not just what you're going to say, but you also have to understand the why of every what of what you're going to say. And for the record, guys, the lack of this understanding of why is often revealed through questions.
Because you ask somebody asks a question and then you can't explain why they should be doing what.
Yes, exactly. And folks, if you ever read your own slides, you have not mastered your content. Now, you might think, oh, didn't you just say that? No. I said earlier, if you have to look at your own slides to know what to say next, you haven't mastered your content. But if you have to read your slides, then that implies that that is the extent of your knowledge. That's what audiences think. If you read your slide, you are telling people that is the extent of my knowledge. And if you say, well, paraphrasing is the same as reading. No, it's not. To the audience, and remember, the audience is who matter. That's it for part one, folks. Come back next week for the concluding portion of The Foundations of Presenting. See you then. This podcast was produced by Manager Tools. Manager Tools creates actionable management guidance every single week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face as a manager or a professional, go to www.manager-tools.com. Search for Manager Tools on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.